All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going deep on a case, United States versus Barrios, that really gets at the heart of something so important. How do you prove you're being unfairly targeted by prosecutors?
You know, it's a fascinating area. This case from 1974, out of the Second Circuit, it's still cited all the time when lawyers are trying to figure out if there's been selective prosecution. And this Pablo Barrios at the center of it all, he was a union official and he got indicted, right?
Yeah, so let's break this down a little bit. Barrios gets hit with this indictment for holding a union office.
Right.
Even though he had this prior arson conviction. Now, this isn't just some random thing. There's an actual federal law about it, this 29 USC Section 504. And it straight up says, if you've got certain convictions on your record, arson being one of them, you're barred from holding those union positions for like a specific amount of time.
Yep. And it wasn't just him. There were others indicted too, right? Neuchâtel, Principe, Zaretsky, all charged with basically enabling Barrios to hold that office.
Right, exactly. But here's the thing, right? Barrios didn't just take this lying down. He comes back swinging, claiming, hey, this whole prosecution, it's politically motivated.
Now, that's interesting, right? Because that's where this whole idea of selective prosecution comes into play.
Yeah.
Barrios is essentially saying, I'm being targeted because of my politics, my actions.
Exactly. And that's what we're diving deep on today. What evidence did Barrios present? And did he clear that high bar the court set for proving selective prosecution? Because the district court actually initially dismissed the case, but then the Second Circuit reversed that. So we're trying to figure out why they disagreed.
And you know what? It's not an easy thing to do. It's a real look into how much evidence you need to show that prosecutors might be acting in bad faith. It really makes you think, how much can we actually know about what goes on behind closed doors in these prosecutorial decisions?
So let's get into this. What are the legal hurdles someone like Barrios has to clear to actually win on a claim of selective prosecution?
So the courts have laid out this two-part test that's become like the standard. You got to prove two things.
Okay.
First, you've got discriminatory effect.
All right, discriminatory effect.
What that means is you have to show you've been singled out, right? Like you're being prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
But other people who did basically the same stuff, they're not.
Okay, I see. So it's not enough to just say, hey, I'm being prosecuted. You have to be able to point to others in like really similar situations who aren't facing charges.
Exactly. You got it.
Yeah.
But then there's a second part. This is the discriminatory intent part. This is where it gets tricky. Now you have to prove that the reason you're being prosecuted and those other folks aren't, it's because of some kind of improper bias. Could be your race, your religion, you name it.
Like in Barrios' case, he was arguing it was his political activity, right? Like they went after him because of who he supported and what he was doing with those unions.
Precisely. But here's the catch. Courts put this like huge burden on defendants to even make what's called a prima facie case for selective prosecution. It's a really high bar.
So basically, you have to come with enough evidence right out of the gate that if the prosecution doesn't have a good counter argument, it at least looks like, hey, there might be something fishy going on here.
Right, exactly. It's like that first impression. You got to make it strong.
So let's talk about what Barrios actually presented to the court. What was his team's argument?
So they submitted this affidavit basically saying, look, we think there have only been like three prosecutions under this specific law since 1969.
Wow, since 69. Okay, so barely any enforcement of this law.
Right. And they also claimed, it's basically common knowledge, that tons of union officials probably have past convictions.
So their argument boils down to this law is basically never used. There are probably tons of other people out there who could be prosecuted under it. So why Barrios? Must be because of his politics.
Yeah, that's the gist. But the Second Circuit, they weren't buying it. They basically said, look, this is all speculation. You're not giving us anything concrete. And this is where the specifics really matter. Barrios never actually named any specific people or unions in the exact same boat who weren't prosecuted.
So he couldn't point to a specific union president with an arson conviction who was like openly serving in their role with no charges.
Exactly. The court was like, low prosecution numbers alone don't equal discriminatory intent.
Yeah.
There could be all sorts of reasons why a law isn't used that often, right? Maybe most unions are just following the rules.
Right, right. It makes you think, though, what if Barrios' lawyers had dug up those names? Like, imagine they found five other union presidents, same arson situation, holding office, no problem. Would that have changed things?
It's a really good question. I think if they'd had that kind of specific evidence, named names, laid out the details, showed that these other people were really in the exact same position, it could have made their case a lot stronger.
Because then the court would have to look at it and say, okay, why is Berrios different?
Right. Why him and not them? That's the question they'd have to grapple with. It really highlights the difference between, like, broad claims and having those hard facts to back you up.
Now, I want to shift gears a bit. This case also had a really interesting procedural twist. The district court actually dismissed the indictment initially because the government wouldn't hand over a prosecution memo. Can you unpack that for us? What was going on there, and why did the Second Circuit step in and reverse that decision?
Yeah, so this gets into a tricky area of, like, what evidence the government has to share with the defense.
Yeah.
There's this rule, Rule 16 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. And it basically says those internal government documents, think prosecution memos, they're protected. They don't have to be turned over to the defense.
Interesting. So the government can kind of keep their strategy and deliberations private.
Well, up to a point, yeah. There's good reason for this, right? You don't want prosecutors worried about every thought ending up in the hands of the defense.
Right. It could lead to witness tampering, or the defense could get an unfair advantage.
Exactly. But it's not a blanket rule.
Mm.
The defense can get access to this stuff sometimes, but only after they've shown they might have a real case for selective prosecution.
So first you got to prove there's reason to believe something shady is going on. Then maybe you get to see the internal memos. You can't just go digging around hoping to find something.
Right. You can't just go on a fishing expedition. That was kind of the Second Circuit's point. They said the district court had things backward. First, Berrios needed to show that discriminatory effect and intent. Then they could talk about the memo.
So because they didn't think Berrios cleared that first hurdle, he wasn't entitled to see it. But what if those documents did have some bombshell evidence in them? Is there any way for a court to peek at them without just handing them over?
Yeah, actually there is. It's called an in-camera review. Basically, the judge can look at the documents privately in their chambers just to see if they're actually relevant to the case.
Oh, interesting. So like in a selective prosecution case, the judge could look at the memo and see if it even hints that the decision to prosecute was based on something like the defendant's political views.
Exactly. It's the judge, like, playing referee and making sure everything's fair. They're balancing the government's need for secrecy with the defendant's right to a fair trial.
So if the judge finds something relevant, they could order the government to turn over part of the memo while keeping the rest confidential.
Yeah, exactly. It's a careful balance. And in Berrios, the Second Circuit actually said in camera review might have been an option if they thought Berrios had a stronger case from the start. But because they didn't, they overturned that dismissal.
So this case really seems to set a high bar for future defendants claiming selective prosecution. What's the big takeaway here?
Well, if you're going to claim selective prosecution, you better come with more than just, like, general accusations or hunches. You need that solid, specific evidence. Show that you were singled out and that it was for the wrong reasons.
And what does this tell us about how much power prosecutors have? You know, for our listeners out there who are really following these legal battles.
It shows just how much discretion prosecutors have in choosing who to go after and for what. And the courts, they're really hesitant to question those decisions unless you can prove some real bias.
So for our law students listening, why is this case something they should really understand? Why is it so important?
Berrios is a great case study because it shows how tough it is to actually win a constitutional challenge in court. Just saying your rights were violated, that's not enough. You got to know the rules, the evidence you need, and be ready for a fight. It's a great example of how those legal theories we learn about actually work in practice.
So, big picture, what's the key lesson from United States v. Berrios?
The courts need proof, not just claims. If you're saying you were targeted because of bias, you have to prove it with clear evidence. Show that others weren't prosecuted for the same thing, and prove there was an unfair reason behind the decision to prosecute you.
That discriminatory effect and discriminatory intent, they both have to be there.
Exactly. And I think this case leaves us with a really important question to think about. This balance between prosecutorial discretion and everyone's right to a fair trial, it's a delicate balance.
It really is.
What kind of evidence do you think would be strong enough to really prove selective prosecution, especially in those politically charged cases? What would it take? I think that's something we're thinking about as you study the law and see these issues play out in the real world. It's an ongoing discussion in legal circles, for sure.
It's a question that doesn't have an easy answer. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Anytime. Glad to be here.